Greetings, true believers, and welcome to this special endgame spoiler-filled episode 15 of the Pull List Podcast, a bi-weekly show about comics, pop culture, and faith. My name is Chris Poirier, and with me as always is the one and only Hector, now IMDb official, Mirai. How's it going, Hector?
It's good. Good. I'm using my beard to hide my Thanos chin, but I'm great. So keep going.
That's really good. Well, excellent. Well, we've got a great show for everybody today. So strap on in and prepare yourself for We've Got Comic Sign. Better put the word out. Get ready for the nerd out. Better put specs on. On today's episode of The Pull List, we've got quite a show for you. We're going to hit some of the latest news in the industry. Will Doomsday Clock number 10 actually be released? She-Ra takes to the funny book pages, and so much more. Hector and I will also lay out a few of our favorite pulls from the last couple weeks. There's some really cool ones out there. And then we will dive straight into everything Avengers Endgame. So seriously, if you haven't seen Endgame yet, hit pause, get to the theater, knock that one out. Because we're not holding anything back today. You have officially been warned. Spoilers are to follow.
But not right now. You can listen a little longer.
But yeah, you can listen at least through what our pulls are and everything. And we'll say the word spoiler like 47 billion times before we really dive into things. But for now, we're going to head on over to the newsroom and we're going to see what's new and awesome. So Hector, anything jump out in the news for you? I know I've got a couple hot leads sitting in front of me, but curious if you saw anything that kind of jumped out for you.
Not really on the news front. I officially saw that the cast of Swamp Thing has officially finalized wrapping, like in real time. They're done. They're done.
Nice.
They have packed up and they are moving to another city for another production. So that's over as far as they're currently filming, and they don't know that anything else is happening. Say they have not been greenlit or told as a production company, we're coming back on this date.
Okay. So that's a quasi-official news from Hector, because he's got some of those plugins there that we at least have our 10 episodes. We know that it's in the can and it's coming soon, but we don't necessarily know what's coming next is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah.
Okay. So I know some of the things that I have that is incredibly exciting for everyone is I do have a Doomsday Clock number 10 update. Are you ready?
Gasp.
Doomsday Clock number 10 currently looks like it's actually going to release on May 29th.
Okay.
Like, dead serious. Everybody actually wrote the articles this week that said we thought we were going to tell you pushed another week or two, but it appears solicited as planned for May 29th. Means that's going to hit FOC here real soon. So final order cutoff. So retailers are going to be ordering it. So we might actually get it this month. But of course, this book was originally solicited for sometime back in March. So anyway, Doomsday Clock might actually hit issue 12 in 2019. Not holding my breath, but you know, hey, that's technically a positive step for the Doomsday Clock franchise. So we'll finally get to see what's going on there. The other thing that I saw that's kind of cool, and I'm semi-excited about it because I don't know about you, but have you been watching She-Ra and the Princesses of Power on the Netflix?
It started in my household and my kids went to the route of Carmen Sandiego over She-Ra.
So, ooh, interesting.
Like they were vibing more with one than the other. And so I don't have enough time to invest in a cartoon currently that my kids aren't going to watch. So, yeah, we ran with that.
That's super valid. My wife and I have been watching it because she's like reliving that 80s dream of She-Ra, and nerding out a little bit. But it's coming as an original graphic novel to the page here sometime in the near future that a creative team has been put together, and it's going to be in the style of the Netflix show and based on that continuity. So there will be a companion comic that will go along with that in the not too distant future. So if you've been enjoying She-Ra on the Netflix, then you have some wonderful, wonderful physical bound copy of a story coming to a comic shop near you. We'll try to keep you updated when actual solicitations hit, but we know that that creative team has at least been gathered and it's a thing. So that's pretty exciting for folks that have been enjoying it. And then the only other thing that probably is a real major news thing in terms of comics for this week, there's lots of other nerdy stuff that's been going on that we could probably get to, but we did talk about the comic Second Coming and the impacts of that, as DC was originally going to publish that under their Vertigo line, and then after multiple, we don't know whether the protest worked or not, but DC backed away from that for one way or one reason or another. And all we do know is that it appears to be coming back here in the not too distant future, and it's going to come under a different comic company. So it's going to come underneath the banner of Ahoy Comics. So Second Coming is definitely apparently solicited now on the books for July through a new comic publisher, Ahoy. So
because we get to revisit. Because everyone's heard of Ahoy and we're excited about Ahoy.
It's a thing. It's the imprint that picked up this controversial book. And if you're interested in hearing our discussion about it, we did talk about it when it was originally solicited through Vertigo and everything. So it's a thing. Here we are. But it's okay. We'll figure it out, and we'll figure it out together. But it is coming. It doesn't appear that Ahoy is going to back out. So that's a thing. I don't really have anything else in way of news, Hector, but is there anything else that really jumped out to you?
No, it's really not.
I mean, in terms of some stuff other than some books that we'll discuss during the pull list section, there hasn't been a ton of comic book news other than obviously Endgame, and we'll get to that
Jared,
a little later in the
Jared
episode.
Leto did put out a statement that he's not done as the Joker. I don't know. He said that he's planning to be the Joker again. I don't know where that's going, but you know, he was interviewed and asked and, you know, said his time's not over.
And now we can look forward, to more Jared Leto as the Joker?
Dude, I'm still really hopeful that, like, under the right direction, it could be good. I don't know.
Maybe some laser tattoo removal as well.
Or just heavy makeup. Just saying. Heavy makeup, bro.
That's fair. Interesting. Well, I mean, Leto does have a bunch of other projects in the works, so we can see what happens with that one.
Here's one thing, too, that I did just see this morning, that The Rock had a meeting with Kevin Feige.
Ooh.
And I just need The Rock to not touch Marvel right now, because I need The Rock to go ahead and invest in Black Adam and Shazam, because I need more of that. And you go away, Kevin Feige, and your bajillion dollars. You leave my man alone and let me have a Black Adam movie so I can have more Captain Sparkle fingers. So get off me. Yeah, that's where I'm at.
I mean, that's pretty valid, actually. No, we definitely need to have some Black Adam action out of The Rock. So that's a good point. We don't want him to end up in a space that he can't contractually fulfill that.
He's already stated, he put out a live video right after Shazam came out, that he was happy with the movie, pleased with the success, and he is going to begin filming Black Adam early 2020. So he already said that, but I don't need Kevin Feige changing the course of where this is going. I don't want to be between a rock and a hard place.
Oh no. Why? This is literally why we can't have nice things. And
no, it's ruined.
I apologize to our great listeners that expect much higher quality entertainment from us.
Shame on you for expecting quality.
Hector, how dare you? But no, I think that's really all the stuff that I had in my pile of interesting things going on in the world, which isn't all that interesting. No. So let's get right along with the show then and jump into the really cool things that we read over the last couple of weeks, because I actually have some books I want to talk about this week. And I'm not going to apologize, but I'm going to apologize that all of my pulls over the last 2 weeks that I really want to focus on here are all number ones.
Uh-huh.
And they're all number ones from different companies. I'm spreading the love around this particular time. But I think we should start right at the top, because I think you said before we started recording that you read this as well, is we have to talk about Deceased number one, right?
Deceased number one, yes.
So DC delivering us a wonderful new mini. I believe it's going to be a 6-issue mini. DC's jumping into zombies, which at first I was like, cool. Marvel zombies, that was a thing. Actually, that was a thing multiple times over. So what are you going to bring to me different and interesting? And I just want to say, I picked it up because I just wanted to know, figuring I was going to put it down and probably be bored with it because zombies are everywhere lately.
Yeah.
I kind of liked this setup. Like, I didn't hate it.
I like the setup a lot. And personally, there was a lot of aspects I really did like. I really did like the snark level of a cyborg.
Right.
Were you seriously just looming in a corner waiting for a good entrance? Like stuff like that. And
right. Yeah.
To me,
that was funny.
To me, it feels like Doom Patrol cyborg. Like,
like that's probably fair. That is kind of the vibe that they gave off in this book.
Yeah. So this is the first time in print I felt like we're getting the cyborg from DC Universe's Doom Patrol that I've read recently. And some of the stuff that you see in the book with the Bat family actually caught me off guard because it was intense and I was like, okay, we're going to be that kind of gangster.
For folks, they're not holding back any punches in terms of who's on the table for being deceased. See how many times we can get that one in while we talk about the deceased book.
You got to admit, it's pretty good. Yeah. It's a pretty good little pun, but
it was great branding. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I was a little caught off guard by some of the savagery. Here's my beef. And you know, you can talk more about how great it is in a second. But here's my beef. They did this already.
Tell me more.
They did this in almost the exact same way already. So the basic premise you'll read like in the first page or two of the book is that Darkseid gets a hold of the anti-life equation, and with a little love from the Death Racer and Cyborg, spreads it throughout the world. And everyone with a phone or social media device gets the anti-life equation in them, and they become zombies. Okay, cool. That exact thing happened in Final Crisis.
Ooh. Okay. That's a good point.
That exact thing happened, disseminated across the internet, disseminated across every screen, where all of humanity was infected with the anti-life crisis, and they basically became savage zombies. They might have not been dead, but there wasn't a lot of distinction between what I saw in Deceased and what I saw in Final Crisis. Now, granted, I get not everyone read Final Crisis and not everyone understood Final Crisis. And Grant Morrison, his run was a hot minute ago. So I get it's been a long time, but it felt like Final Crisis.
Right. All right. No, that's actually a really fair point. Part of me still kind of liked pulling that, like you said, pulling that story forward a little bit because, I mean, it was applicable during Final Crisis in our culture, but even more so today, right? That you can't peel your eyes away from the screen type of thing. And they played a lot off from that in that, you know, it's the literal joke of we're zombies to the machine type thing. So it's not lost on me that the source material probably it might even come out that there's something interrelating here. Because, you know, this is the first shot in a 6-part. And sometimes we just don't learn all the pieces until later. So first of all, go read Final Crisis, children. You can go and learn a wonderful, wonderful thing in, about comics and history and all that kind
of
stuff.
You can see Batman, air quotes, die.
We get right quotes.
And also, if you do go read Final Crisis, point of interest, there's a wonderful Easter egg where they actually paint Serenity into the background. The ship Serenity from Firefly is in its all its full glory on a panel, just flying in the sky for no good reason.
And we just want the entire world to know that, yes, that means that Firefly is canon.
Yes, in DC.
So I enjoyed Deceased. So if you were on the fence about it and you want to enjoy a DC-based zombie story, it at least appears for the first installation that it's worth kind of jumping on and seeing where that ride's going to go. So definitely pick it up. Give it a shot. My next number one in the pile is Fallen World number one, which is a book from Valiant. I've always been a huge supporter of Valiant and the work that they do over there. They have their own superhero universe with tons of awesome characters like Bloodshot, which gets a Vin Diesel movie here in the next year or so. Eternal Warrior, Exo Manowar, Rai, etc. There's tons of really cool characters in this world, and it's independent. It's their thing. And I've just always enjoyed the amount of effort they dump into that. And what's really fun is Fallen World is bringing Rai kind of back into the story fold again. And that's really great because I loved that character a ton. So it's really good to see him back and kind of playing things out. It is kind of very steeped in Valiant's universe, but one of the best things about reading Valiant comics is you can pretty much pick up any of their books and they're going to tell you what you need to know in the quick blurb in the front. All comics do this, but I got to give Valiant tons of credit. They're just really good at it. Some other books I've picked up and I'm like, cool, I think I get it. But Valiant books, usually they give you enough information to get rolling and they're very vivid in their colors and their characters are kind of unique. So if you're looking for something new and different, definitely pick that bad boy up. And then I picked up Ascender number one from Image Comics, which is another thing that I thoroughly enjoy because Ascender is the sequel to the book Descender, which Jeff Lemire did previously. And I think I've talked about on this that that's one of those things you need to read, that Descender was a really great story. And Ascender jumps us into the future of that same world and talks about a child that is now in that world, and that world is now steeped in magic, which is a world that was originally steeped in nothing but technology. So it's a pretty neat thing that's going on there, and same great art, same great creative team. So if I convince you to pick up Descender, you should pick up Ascender because it's just continuing that awesome, awesome world.
And, you know, who is he that ascends except he who descended? Because, you know, throw out a Bible reference. Ooh.
Hi-oh. There's a lot of really neat imagery and some things that they do discuss in this book. So they're definitely talking about things of spiritual nature in this world because it's a really interesting world because technically they didn't know magic existed. And now they're in a world that it was nothing but tech and science that they now know magic exists. So I'm looking forward to see how he weaves those stories and everything.
Right.
And then finally, off from my list, I have a Marvel number one. Gasp. So all of you that think I don't say nice things about Marvel, well, this is why you had to strap yourself in for this episode because Chris is about to say something nice about a Marvel book, and that was Thanos number one from Teenie Howard. Teenie is awesome. I've had the chance to meet her multiple times. She was local to North Carolina, so we had her in the shop and at a lot of our shows, and she's done a lot of really cool work. And she's now, you know, doing exclusive stuff at Marvel. And I'm so happy for her and for Marvel to pick her up. But Thanos number one was pretty awesome. We've seen a lot of cool Thanos stories. And she is bringing us back to the portion in time where Thanos finds Gamora and actually raises her. So this story arc is going to be entirely that. So you see the violence of Thanos and the Black Order. The Black Order's all there. You know, going planet to planet, just wiping people out as Thanos is trying to catch the eye of Lady Death. So thank you. That is back into the discussion. We can save some of that for the discussion on Endgame and what they did with Infinity War in general. But if you don't know who Lady Death is and why Thanos cares, that the short version of this is that that's actually the point of the story. But that's in comics. MCU took a different direction. It's still cool. But we're kind of back to roots in terms of why Thanos is a crazy, maniacal, murder-the-world person. Book was fun, including wiping people out and chasing death. So
because book is the mad Titan Thanos. Movie is the altruistic, sacrificial Titan Thanos. And those aren't the same people.
Nope. They're very different people with different motivations, so it's fun because if you enjoyed everything that is Endgame and all that, then you've got a place to come back to and pick up tons of awesome comics to fill in more about who Thanos the Mad Titan truly is, was, etc. So it was fun. I always give a number one a chance. If I hit the end of number one and I'm not compelled to pick up another issue, then that's where it ends. But with all of those this week, I went some of those I was going to get no matter what, but other ones I was like, okay, I'll see if it sticks. These stuck for me this week, so that's why. Sweet. I wanted to share them with all of you wonderful people. So tell me a wonderful story of the things that jumped into your pull this week, Hector.
So I see your Marvel pull recommendation, and I raise you a double Marvel pull recommendation. That's right. Two of my three recommendations this week come from Marvel. Eat it, Chris.
Yeah, right. And but the rest of you that have been complaining to us, there's still no X-Men titles on this. So get off us. We're sorry.
Well, sort of. Two of these are okay, both of mine are both actually pseudo X-Men titles. They just don't have an X in the title.
I'll allow it. Never mind. I take that back. We're good.
We show the mutant love. So one of my picks, I think my favorite for the week is Domino Hotshots number 3. And just it's continuing the story of Domino, but she keeps steamrolling with assembling this large squadron of her own. And the last issue before this, we got introduced to Deadpool back in the mix, which was great. This is honestly the best Black Widow book I've read in a while, which having her on the team and her interacting with Deadpool was great. But one of the cool things is that Iron Man was basically the villain of the story this week. And
interesting.
That basically the whole plot point of this Deadpool or this Domino 5-issue series is that there is a key that basically gives everyone godlike power. And that Black Widow Domino and her team are trying to destroy it. Iron Man's trying to acquire it for possibilities. And he's willing...
for reasons.
Yeah, for reasons. For his own, you know, because he needs to put a metal cage or blanket or whatever he said around the world. But...
I get that reference.
You get that reference. He was willing to, like, literally shoot Black Widow, Domino, Deadpool, and her whole squadron out of the sky and let them die so that he could collect it. And so he blew up their ship thinking they'd have a way to stop it, and they didn't. And so Iron Man put an entire city in imminent danger, and his infinite ability and mechanical tech did not have the ability to save them from the repercussions of his own selfishness. And so that was just like, and watching the chaos of him seeing, oh, I screwed up the world again, was kind of great. Actually getting to see Rhodey, and I haven't seen Rhodey in a book in a minute outside of being War Machine. Just him in a military suit was dope. You get to see Deadpool have a romantic interest, like not him just being a doofus, like someone choosing him. And actually being sincere with him. And it was kind of nice. So Domino, and man, there's just so much heart in Gail Simone writing Domino. I know I love Gail Simone writing in general, but dude, the amount of heart she puts into these Domino books literally gets me about every time. Because it's so much about family and friendship and the people you choose in your life. Man, I could reread her whole run on Domino and be satisfied. So there's that. Savage Avengers number 1 is a pull I picked up. And I will read it the next issue. But almost this entire issue was just Conan, whatever. I always say it wrong when I'm not thinking about red hair. It's basically just Conan and Wolverine beating the crap out of each other because they're heading in the same direction. And then they have beer and everyone's friends. But that's about where we're at, is that the first issue is mainly just Conan and Wolverine, and they are being thrust together because they are pursuing a similar goal for different reasons. And it was an interesting thing. It wasn't badly done. It's the first book I've read of Conan in a while and just felt like, okay, I can keep going with this. But when this entire team assembles, I really do think it's going to be something worthwhile to see the chaos that ensues. So I'm gonna keep going with Savage Avengers number 1. I always hate when they show you a full team on a cover and don't have a full team in a book yet. I trust me, we've already had these discussions about covers. It's the same thing with Red Hood and the Outlaws, the run with Bizarro. They had the full team on the cover like 4 issues before they had the team. And I'm like, boo, don't do that.
How dare you.
And then my other pull for this week was Harley Quinn 61. And here's the thing I've enjoyed about Harley's different runs. They give you enough heads up in the marketing and everything else to say, hey, here's a cool story. You don't have to know everything else. Jump in and leave when you're ready. a little while ago.
Go on. I'm intrigued.
A little while ago, they did a run where Harley became a female Fury for on Apocalypse under Granny Goodness. And they told you, this is when it starts, this is when it's over. And you know what? I picked it up, I read it, I enjoyed it. When it was over, I stopped. They did a team up recently where it was Harley and Batman as a team. Picked it up, read it, moved on. I've not read a continual run. I picked up the initial like 20 Harley Quinn issues of After Rebirth, and I let it go. But lately they've done a really good job of just saying, this is a story you might enjoy. Have fun with it. So the story they just started with Harley Quinn 61 is basically Harley tries to cheer up Selina after all the Bruce drama by teaching her to play D&D. And it doesn't work. But
no, I was going to say that's legit, but that makes me sad now.
I honestly felt a little more like Selina than the Harley in this because she was miserable. And like I felt that way. And it's not even D&D, dude. And I know how detailed D&D is. I felt that way just trying to read all the rules and instructions for Dice Throne. I loved it. I got into it. My kids and I have been playing Dice Throne for like a hot minute now. But like the first time I opened the box, I'm like, this is so much. I don't know what to do. And so it was great. But like, that's the thing. Like Harley's tried to explain all the spells and the castings and everything else. And Selena's like, can I have more wine? So it was a fun experience. But bottom line, their world gets turned into a live action D&D thing. Enchantress changes the entire world into a D&D quest. And one of the cooler parts of this is that you get alternative character representations of old school Gotham people you've seen forever. And you get people that haven't been used well in a while. Like you get a Silver St. Cloud. Dude, when's the last time you saw Silver St. Cloud in anything? It's been a minute. And then so...
Nice.
But my favorite one, like, and it was only like a couple panels, but, they've got a dwarf, assassin looking version of Penguin called Oswald Cobblestone.
Yes.
And dude, when I saw this little dwarf elf looking, he kind of looks like Gimli. and when I saw Oswald Cobblestone, I'm like, yep, I'm a cosplay that. I'm gonna buy an action figure. I'm gonna get an artist print. I was like, I like that. So there's a lot of that. So if the idea of Harley Quinn in a D&D Game of Thrones-esque world entertains you, you should pick up Harley Quinn 61. And I just to throw back, I didn't put it on my pull, but just, man, Heroes in Crisis 8, I've gone back and reread that a few times, and it's still something I'm chewing on and enjoying at the depth of that book. So nice. Yeah, so
that's those are some yeah, those are some pretty awesome pulls for this week. And man, we really read some good comics in the last couple
I had that feeling like this week I was like, this was a really good few weeks.
Yeah, and we've said the last couple weeks that we've been reading a lot of ongoing stuff, but seeing new stuff that energizes us I think is a good turn in the recent events. So that's really awesome. So it's really good to see. I know a lot of folks in the community have been saying things about their pulls, and you guys get another week to tell us some of the awesome things you've been pulling, because we want to get into the reason we wanted to podcast today and to deliver to you the spoiler-filled, spoiler-epic, spoilers of spoilers in Avengers Endgame, because there are spoilers. And we want to talk about what Hector and I had the joy of seeing in MCU's just epic.
So we're about to get Stephanie Brown in this piece.
Yeah, so we're about to do the thing that we said at the top of the show that we're going to say spoilers like 47 times, and I lost track of how many times I said it so far. Spoilers. So if you haven't seen Endgame for serious, we don't want to ruin this experience for you. Our goal is not to ruin it for people, but we do want to talk about it for those of you that have had the chance to see it. So we can talk about some of the cool things that we saw. We can talk about some of the things that you might have missed. And so if you haven't gotten to it yet, just hit pause. Come back to us. We'll be here. We still love you. We just don't want to ruin this awesome experience, because you need to go into this movie fresh and clean, because it will be a great experience
so
for
fresh
you.
And so clean, so clean.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just
so Hector,
jump back
you're
in.
Ready
the
to jump
minute
right
mark.
On in?
Yeah.
Yep. Let's do it. So all those spoilers, here we go. Let's talk the magnificent reality that was a 1.2 billion, as in B billion, global opening weekend. Double Infinity War in income and gross income worldwide. First $1 billion global release ever. Right off the top, Hector, where do you start this discussion?
Well, I think we start with the discussion with the meme that explains the box office take. The only reason it made that much money is because Doctor Strange watched it 14 million times.
I mean, that's completely fair.
So I'll kick off a few things. First off, I enjoyed it. Let me put that out there. I enjoyed it more than Infinity War. And I didn't love Infinity War. I've got lots of reasons why I didn't love Infinity War, and I know that that puts me at odds with lots of people, but fight me. Or don't. You can just be civil and actually have different opinions and not need to feel the need to argue. But I didn't enjoy Infinity War, but I enjoyed this one a lot more. And I got really emotional at many points. I think I cried 3 times throughout the movie. I think my biggest thing is that I did not love the first 2 hours. I did not love the first 2 hours. Now, I had the whole time travel aspect of this ruined for me almost a year and a half ago. I have a friend who's a voice actor, and he gave me a spoiler because he's in the movie, in the scene where Iron Man is talking to his father and giving him fatherly advice. And he told me, hey, I filmed Infinity War today. He thought the movie he was in was Infinity War. And it turned out the movie he was in was not Infinity War. The movie that he was in was Endgame.
Oh, snap.
Because here's the deal. They filmed both of these at the same time.
Yep.
And he had no knowledge of which movie he was actually filming. So while we're having lunch one day, he said, yeah, I filmed a scene on an Infinity War. And I was like, I knew that Infinity War wasn't going to be the end of the story. So I'm like, go ahead and tell me your scene. And he told me I was a 1970s military officer while Tony Stark talked to his father. Well, when I got to Infinity War and saw that Tony Stark was not in the 70s and was not talking to his father, I'm like, crap. They time traveled. That's how he happened. And I was like, and so it was, I've known time travel is coming the whole time. Now, I don't mind time travel. I don't mind that it's how they did it. It was not a bad idea. Well done. But here's the deal. I'm a fan of time travel science fiction. I have a daughter named after a Doctor Who character. I'm a very valid fan of time travel. I felt like the plot and premise of that was sloppy sci-fi. I felt like it was sloppy fan service sci-fi just to get us back to the point. And I know that it's like, hey, this was like a band coming on the encore doing their greatest hits after you've spent, 54 hours at their concert. It's just like, I was like, I get it. We're going back to all the stuff that was cool before. And we're, oh, look, you got Natalie Portman back. High five. Good job. Which I actually was excited. But it's just one of those things. I felt like the time travel aspect for the first 2 hours was a bit sloppy. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it a lot. But the first 2 hours were rough for me. In some of those aspects, dude, you've heard me and we've had this discussion. One of my biggest beefs with Thor Ragnarok is I hated the fact that you took Thor and turned it into a buddy comedy.
So this was probably really painful for you.
This was the fact that they turned Thor into a buddy comedy was a big problem for me with Ragnarok.
Aww.
And then you turn around and you take Thor and Hulk and make them even more of a joke.
The Hulk thing actually is from a direct run in the middle of the Incredible Hulk.
Yeah, the mid-90s, and I actually enjoyed that. But the people that didn't, the people that aren't familiar with that run saw it as more of a bigger joke than Fat Thor. I was talking to a friend of mine who's never read a comic book who was more angry at Nerdy Hulk than Fat Thor. And so that was something they were dealing with. But straight up, dude, Lebowski Thor made me want to walk out of the theater. Right.
Oh man, why are you hating?
Because I'm hating because, okay, once upon a time they had considered casting Jonah Hill as a Green Lantern.
Oof. Okay, never mind, go on.
Once upon a time there was a Hollywood pitch meeting where they literally pitched an idea for a Green Lantern comedy starring Jonah Hill as Green Lantern.
That makes my head hurt a little bit. I feel like it's one of those things that we should come back to at some point, because just knowing that that exists in the universe is separate from the, well, maybe it's in the same universe.
But
the quantum realm allows all things.
The quantum realm allows all things. But here's the deal, dude. Thinking of Jonah Hill or even Jack Black as a Green Lantern in his own movie is the same thing we got with Lebowski Thor. You took a powerful force of nature, one of the strongest characters in comic book continuity, and reduced it to a bad SNL sketch.
Oh, man. Hector coming in heavy.
Well, like I said, the first 2 hours were my beef. I wasn't mad at it. I sound mad at it. I don't love the choices. Now.
You mad, bro? I'm mad. You sound a little mad. Okay.
Now, I actually really enjoyed Nerdy Hulk in context. I really did. But, like, it was hard for me to get the fat Thor taste out of my mouth after that. So there's that. But beyond that, my other thing, I'm going to skip to my good stuff. The last hour, to me, was sheer perfection. I would gladly pay a full-price movie ticket to watch the last hour of this movie at any point in time.
No, absolutely.
Like, I will sit in the lobby and play Nintendo Switch and try and beat Cuphead for 2 hours and wait until that mark. Literally, the moment where Iron Man, Thor, and Captain America walk out from the rubble to address Thanos sitting there. From that point on, game freaking on. Everything after that moment for me was perfect. It was great.
And wasn't it also the most comic book thing we have possibly seen in one of these movies for literally a solid hour? That, you know, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, all of us were like, wow, that was the most comic book movie I've ever seen. Then I saw Avengers Endgame, and that scene hits and runs a full hour, and I'm like, there is literally so much going on right now. I don't know if I'm going to be able to comprehend everything happening right now.
You're not a Thrones person, right?
Not really. I'm a little behind, so okay. It's kind of eh.
Well, there was an advertisement or a discussion for the episode of Game of Thrones that followed Endgame, the weekend of Endgame. It's called the Battle of Winterfell.
Right. No, I'm down. I know what's going on.
Okay. It was supposed to be the longest, largest battle in television history. And it took them 55 nights to film. And in negative 14 degree weather. I mean, it was this big deal. I felt like that hour of Endgame, even the sad parts at the end and everything, I felt like that was way better and bigger and more satisfying than what Game of Thrones was advertising was going to happen. So all of my emotional moments happened in that last hour. Dude, when Captain America says assemble, like I got goosebumps. Oh, I got goosebumps right now saying it.
I was so excited.
When I hear him say the word Avengers, and I'm like, and it dawns on me, he's going to say it. He's going to, oh, like I literally, like I was trying to like forcibly hold my T-Rex arms to my chest so that I didn't fist bump continually and ruin people's views. But it didn't happen, because as soon as he said a symbol, I let like a solid 3 minutes of random fist bumps like I'm uppercutting the world. but like when he said a symbol, I straight cried with joy at that.
Yep.
And then, you know, even that like on your left, like caught me so
right.
Caught me so off guard. And that got me ready. I wasn't ready for the hype that ensued with that. And that's really special to my kids right now, because my kids and I went on a trip to DC over Christmas. And we went to the spot where they actually did the on your left thing with Falcon and Captain America, and they got to run around, you know, the same path that they were running. And I filmed a video of my kids like running past each other doing On Your Left. So that's really iconic to them. They loved that. So literally it was like when they heard On Your Left, all three of my kids like leapt out of their seat and looked at me. And so that was a big moment for my family just in that. So I loved that. And literally everything that happened after that, I have some critiques, but like it was great. You know, the whole battle ensuing, seeing everyone come in, seeing Howard the Duck, you know, in the battle scene.
Right.
All that was dope. I loved it. I thought they played it out well. I don't like Iron Man as a, you know, whatever. I'm on that Lego Batman status of Iron Man sucks is generally my mantra. He's just a douchier Batman. And, which is really funny. On the first Faith and Fandom book, there's an Amazon review where somebody is just angry that I said I don't like Iron Man, but still wrote a Bible study about him. And that's
how dare you?
That's their whole negative review.
See, literally.
But I cried. I cried hard when Iron Man died because they made me care. So the fact that I don't generally like this character, but you did it well enough and I invested enough in this that I moved, well done. And then for me, right, honestly, like with seeing Cap get his last dance, dude, I cried with just pure satisfaction. I'm like, that's how you do it. That's how you close this chapter.
As soon as they cut to that, I was like, they're actually doing it, because I literally remember talking to tons and tons of other comic fans and, of course, Cap fans going, straight up, if Steve doesn't get his last dance, we're going to burn this mother down. And then literally that they decide to do that. Like, okay, that was the next time I was like, I'm not crying, you're crying. Okay, I'm crying. But I think, the truly amazing thing, and we can't even possibly cover it all, because I think I watched a 35-minute movie covering all of the random references and Easter eggs, etc., from Endgame that I'm pretty sure missed another half hour worth. That the thing that impressed me most is 20-plus movies of a single story. A single story. Threaded together so well that all of those references actually call back to previous movies, to comics. There were comic references that weren't really in any of the movies that in that last hour, I'm just like, that's a thing. 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 Holy, what? That's also a thing. And that some of them literally were like a 1 to 5 second hit of something that wasn't even really attached to the story that was being told. But it was like, cool, we're dropping this one right now. Because how much, I mean, the Avengers Assemble and everything, but did you cheer unincredibly wildly when Cap picked up Thor's hammer?
Oh yeah,
for the holy first time in that fight, because like all of, and then just the perfect Thor line following it of I knew he was worthy, and I'm just like, yes, Steve Rogers is amazing.
and then like the question is like, was he always worthy? Was he fronting in Ultron?
You know, right,
did he become worthy at some point? Either way, no, like him picking up the hammer, dude, I mean, it doesn't get better than that. It just really doesn't. And then, like, one of our artist friends, Chris McJunkin, wasted no time to do a print of having Steve Rogers with the hammer and the shield. And it was great.
No, that, I mean, the thing that's just wonderful about this film, like, even we don't get into the nitty gritty of it, is the part that I said is they just wrapped up 11 years of telling that single threaded story with all these little pieces that how could we have expected more or less from that 3 hours and 2 minutes? That, like you said, I've heard similar people say that the first 2 hours were, why am I here? And I get that. Some of it I enjoy from the perspective that it gave us the impact from the first movie and then started to work out the final pieces so we could get that last hour. So I wasn't totally bummed by it, because I was like, okay, I see what you're doing. I know why you're doing it. But I guess like some of the things that some of our fans are probably going to hear about is going to be those that made the ultimate sacrifice during this and how we feel about how those things played out. Because let's be honest, the whole Hawkeye Black Widow thing, I did not see playing out that way. And the fact that they also made me gasp four times in a row as it literally was them fighting to who was going to sacrifice themselves.
And let me just put it out there. Hawkeye's arc, for me, was worth the 2 hours at the beginning.
Right.
The thing with his family. Ugh, ugly cry. I mean, like...
Yeah, there was audible gasps in my theater. Like, we're all like, oh, Hawkeye. And that whole thing, you know, his family slowly dusts away. Because, you know, they're not at the battle. So we finally saw what it looked like to other people. And him just calling out the names of his family and looking for his wife, like, broke my movie theater before we even started watching the movie.
Because I'm a salty heifer and, like, a general douchebag in general. My first thought was, ow, that hurts my heart. My second thought was, like, if you'd been in the battle, maybe it wouldn't have happened. Because Hawkeye would have aimed for the head. Whatever.
Noted.
Sorry if you don't like me anymore. His whole arc and Ronan, dude. Ooh.
And then Natasha being the one that brings him back to the you're better than this and that type of stuff. I was like, you know what?
Don't you give me hope.
Right. Hawkeye just kind of having that undertone through this entire arc. And then we hit the end and it's like, oh, that mattered a lot.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
That, you know, anyone that felt he was being underserved, all of a sudden it was like, okay, we know who Hawkeye is now. And that's like super deep. And then just them trading that entire back and forth of you saved me first. Like, I know there's tons of people that are really upset that they're like, they think this is the end of Black Widow and everything, and that this was a cheap way out and all that. I was like, listen to the conversation, though, and actually track their history through all the movies. Because they explain
Thor
why they're friends.
Yeah.
Right. They explain why they're friends through all of this. And that last moment really was gut-wrenching. And the sacrifice that they were both willing to make is really, really amazing. And to be completely honest, pay attention here, folks. She sacrificed against the soul world. Now, the Russos have claimed that the soul debts cannot be recovered. But I'm sorry. All of us in comics know that the soul debts mean that they go to the soul world, and we just haven't been introduced to where the soul world is and if it's actually accessible in the MCU. I do not, under any circumstance, believe that her or Gamora are completely lost to the MCU.
Well, here's the deal, dude. They covered their butts with that so well because we lost Gamora. I totally don't expect to get old Gamora back, but they gave us 2014
Gamora. A new one. Right.
So all that does is set up more contrast and more conflict for Quill to get her back and for Quill to regain her love and to make a
bet.
Because here's the deal. If you put Happy Gamora on the Guardian ship with Happy Peter, you don't have conflict. And where's the story? They're better when they're fighting and they're better when they're actually getting to know each other. All they did was set up better storytelling.
I think you nailed it, though. I, not knowing anything, but if I had to guess, and where they left us with the Asgardians of the galaxy, so you can continue to hate that, apparently.
I'm not mad at that. I'm not mad at that.
Yeah, but that guarantees Thor is literally going to be full comedy, and it's been highly rumored he's already contracted for Volume 3, which tells me Volume 3, if I had to bet right now, is going to be Peter trying to figure out how to find the original Gamora, and that story will resolve however it resolves.
Yeah.
So that's why I think that literally set that up, because Peter isn't going to let it go.
No.
I highly doubt he's going to let it go. So I agree with you. And so now we get to see whether it's true or not.
Well, and here's the deal. You made the point about the ultimate sacrifice, but here's the deal with that. Marvel, I had, and we've had this. I'm sure you can dig a podcast up with us somewhere that is us talking about this. One of my biggest beefs with Infinity War is, like, the week after Infinity War, they announced Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yep.
Or Far From Home, or whatever movie it was. Far From Home. Yeah.
Far From Home.
Yeah. They announced Spider-Man Far From Home a week after Infinity War that it was coming. So they went ahead and told you none of this matters. Now, come on.
We're about to find out.
Come on.
But if we're following the MCU timeline, Far From Home is in the year 2023, because those 5 years that passed.
Yeah, but no, they said it is, and they've said this week, Feige said this week, it takes place after Endgame.
Right.
So, none of this matters, because we know we got Spider-Man back. We knew we were getting Spider-Man back, within a week of Infinity War. People hadn't even watched the movie yet, and we knew we were getting Spider-Man back. Now, we already know all these characters, air quotes, that we lost, that died, that are gone. Name one character that died in Infinity War that's not living on in some other Marvel incarnation. We already know there's a Black Widow movie. We already know that Loki has a TV series. We already know that Scarlet Witch and Vision have a TV series.
The Scarlet Witch and Vision has been rumored to take place in the 1950s, so they're going to do some weird time stuff there.
Right, but
they're going. So, but yes, it's valid. The Loki thing, I'm actually super comfortable with, because that, remember, even with the putting the stones back in place, now this is where everyone's going to get super mad at all of us, but we're talking about quantum realm time travel and not linear time travel, that I am very comfortable with the moment in New York that went sideways and Loki did the BAMF with the Tesseract.
That was how it created, sets up. Yeah, I got that.
Created another reality that we, even with putting the stones back, that some of the things that occurred, there are definitely multiple realities that were established, is my read of things, because they did not resolve themselves. That as soon as Loki BAMFed and poofed and disappeared, that was a stone being taken out of place. That, remember, even with the quantum realm slipping in and out, that if they went before that, that event still happened.
Okay, point in case. I hear you on that. But how do you know that the Loki we got in Ragnarok, or even better case, the Loki we got at the beginning of Infinity War, isn't the Loki possessing that Tesseract?
Well, that's what's super fun about this argument now, is we don't.
We don't. So it's possible. Here's the deal. That perfectly sets up the TV show. Like,
oh, heck yeah. That's why I'm excited, for sure.
He BAMFed with that. Bam. We have all the plausible reasons why Loki has a TV show.
Yep. No, it's the thing that's so comic booky about it is, it was designed to have the appearance of, oh, we fixed everything. Well, actually, there's enough inconsistencies, you should pay more attention. Because I think they ended up being more consistent with their definition of time travel than anyone's giving them credit for. It's just way more complicated than we really think. Because of the slipping in and out of time with the quantum realm, the possibility of infinite realities is still present in this universe. And that super simplistic explanation of just put the stones back exactly in the right place doesn't convince me that the whole branching thing didn't occur and that they can come back to that. So, because otherwise you get that issue of everyone makes the argument, and we should end today's episode talking about it, is, well, then why didn't you time stone Tony's sacrifice? Well, that's because if you did that, you end up with Thanos still doing all the things you literally just undid.
Well, no, but we also have the fact that Doctor Strange watched all the outcomes, and this was the only way we win.
Right.
I think that that argument comes up, and that's where it stops every time.
Yep.
Yeah.
Is that this is the way it had to play out exactly, which is why my favorite thing, who is the actual hero of Endgame? It's the random rat back in San Francisco, because if that rat did not hit that button at exactly the right time, then we don't get Scott back, and we don't get the explanation of the quantum realm. You're welcome. A rat saved the universe. I'm not sorry.
No, that totally is a thing. It's very Doom Patrol, but that's what happened.
Right? Which comes back to the how many of those 14 plus million times did that rat just miss? Like, just thinking out that entire scenario has been fun and fascinating to me. But I think the thing that really hangs on me for Endgame as a total package, like I said, the fact that they knew, because they had to lay this out in order to get here. If you didn't plan to get here, I don't know how you got here without way more inconsistencies. Is the fact that you took the guy, you literally introduced the world as one of the most self-centered, just annoying dude in general, ended up being the guy that saves the entire universe, because he actually learns on that journey how to become a better person and what self-sacrifice actually means. That, like, you know why I really lost it when that finally became clear, is because as soon as he solved the time travel thing, I think he knew.
Oh, I think he knew too.
I think when he put that together and was telling Pepper about it, that they knew what was coming. And he technically had finally given her the perfect life that none of them ever thought they were going to get. Away from all the garbage superheroes, just us in the cabin with our kid, and still when faced with the better option, he still did it. And So love, hate Iron Man. I was just impressed that we can now look at this story and tell the story of total redemption from a guy that even 5 years ago probably would have thought, no way. That's a Steve Rogers move. That's a Cap move. That's not an Iron Man move. And
which I think they set that up so well with Avengers 1 with the whole wormhole deal or whatever that was.
Yep. And that's why I just thought that is exactly how you do this. I'm glad to debate with anyone that wants to talk it in and out, but I don't know how this story ends any other way. And it feel as fulfilling as that did. Because, I mean, that was, like I said, that's literally 11 years of us absorbing this story and going, yep, that makes sense. And that it was so deeply impactful. And then just tying up those little ends around it with working out Steve's story, working out Valkyrie's story, that everybody kind of got their end. That I was talking to some other comic book people. The thing I loved about this is, you know, when you're reading comic arcs and everything, it'll say to be continued. Or at the end of the story, it says the end, period. And that's where that comic story ends. I felt once we hit credits for that movie and we didn't get anything, you know, there were no... Everyone's like, why didn't they set up the next thing? I was like, because that is literally how a comic book ends. It literally says, and that's it, done. I really dug that. I thought that was amazing from just that piece as well. So final thoughts. What do you got that people have to absolutely know for Endgame? For you?
For me, it was, I think they celebrated the fans really well, but I think the biggest thing is that they ended a story well. For me,
right.
Telling a story is always the most important part, but if you tell a great story and end it poorly, boo. Like, you ruin it. I mean, look at Dexter, look at Lost, Heroes. Look at these stories we've loved that ended poorly. You know, you ended this really well. Personally, I always loved the ending of the Dark Knight trilogy. He stopped being Batman. He enjoyed his life, and Alfred got to see him be happy. Way to freaking go. With this, dude, you let Iron Man redeem himself, become a sacrificial hero, and you let Captain America have his freaking dance with his girl. Dude, you nailed it.
Yep.
There's not a better way. I mean, sure, they set up the future. They made the Asgardians of the Galaxy. They got a new Cap with Bucky. They set the future up. But personally, I don't even care if I see that future. You ended the story I've invested in. Okay, with Iron Man 1, I had a newborn daughter. With my wife and I, Iron Man 1 was the first movie we took our newborn daughter to, and I stood at the back and held her ears during the gunfire because it scared her. I literally stood there holding my daughter during Iron Man 1, and to see my almost teenage daughter sitting in the theater crying over this story that moved her, bro, that's woof, woof.
Nope. They did it well. I think if I had to wrap it up, the thing that I had a few of my friends mention, and it's worth re-mentioning, is the Marvel Cinematic Universe gave us 20 plus shared cultural experiences with other fans and was done so well that we expect to go to movies now on opening night, opening weekend, sometimes even later than opening weekend, to hear cheering, crying, etc. for our superheroes. These people that the story has meant so much to us because we could relate, or just because we finally got to see that story played out, just like Kevin Smith. And we've talked about how Kevin talks about comics and everything, is that we should just be thankful we have these things. But now that we have them and that they were good, is such an awesome experience for us as fans and everything. And that was the love letter that I think all of us needed, and gives us hope that there's more to come. But like you said, if it doesn't, then that was 20 plus movies of just great in terms of being able to capture us, tell a really long, complicated story, and grasp people that might not have really enjoyed these things yet. And now those people are reading comics that weren't reading comics. And, you know, we didn't even get in that today, but to confuse some of you, if you didn't know, I can't give you one comic that tells this story. It was between 12 and 15 different story arcs they weaved to tell just the Endgame story. It wasn't just Infinity Gauntlet. It wasn't just Infinity War. It wasn't just Hickman's Infinity. It wasn't just Ultimates 2. It was a ton of different things. And
a lot of original.
Oh, yeah. Tons of original stuff. And then, like I said, 1 to 3 second references of stuff that isn't even in this part of the story, but they dropped anyway. So, you know what? This is going to drop after Free Comic Book Day, but, you know, take advantage of things like Free Comic Book Day and get into your local comic shops. Free Comic Book Day is always the first Saturday in May. So, again, you missed it by the time you heard this, and that's our bad. But know that these types of things are designed to get you into a shop to take enjoyment in the content that is being brought to the screen. And that's the kind of stuff that Hector and I are here for, we live for. And just needlessly put, Avengers Endgame and 20-plus epic movies that currently is the MCU is just an amazing feat of cinema and storytelling that is worth the investment. If you haven't jumped in or if you've only seen parts of it, take the opportunity, because will Marvel be able to top this first act? We don't know. And if they do, I'm all for it. It's awesome. If they don't, well, you know, we still got this amazing story. 11 years of storytelling, 50-plus hours of entertainment that shows this story and these lives of these heroes and people. So let's just hope that we can see more of this in the future, because I agree with Kevin Smith. I'm just thankful that all the cool stuff is hitting now, and we should support all the stuff that's out there, because once it's gone, it's gone. So, you know, Hector and I are super happy to be here to be able to bring this to you guys every couple weeks. Share some of your thoughts in the community in terms of Endgame. If you've got questions, we definitely did not get to even a percentage of the things that happened in this movie. So just take that opportunity to jump on the Facebook community. You can email us at thepulllistpodcast@lovethynerd.com. We're working on some other stuff to hopefully get on Reddit and that type of stuff, so you can have other ways to interact with us. But just know, we're here for you guys. We love comics, and this was a major thing for comics and the movie industry. So if you don't know what we're talking about, or if you haven't gotten to it yet, you shouldn't have been listening. We warned you. But, you know, jump into all the pieces. But that's it for us here at the Pull List Podcast. This is episode 15. It's now in the can and hopefully in your ears. But we couldn't possibly do this alone. As many of you know, we take this adventure of podcasts and fandom and all kinds of nerdy things with a group called Love Thy Nerd, and we're part of the Love Thy Nerd podcast network. And we are here with a couple of other shows. First of all, we have Humans of Gaming with Drew and Chris. They do interviews with game designers, producers, creators, and really get down to the heart of why they do what they do and what they design. And then on the other hand, we have the Free Play podcast, which is just a bonanza of crazy, nerdy, awesome things. And Bubba, Matt, and Kate bring us that, and they just talk about almost everything possibly nerdy. They play lots of games, video games, tabletop, and they tackle some of those difficult, nerdy things on a week-to-week basis. And you can get all of this at lovethynerd.com. So Hector and I, again, we just really want to thank you guys for choosing us to be your source of all things comic booky and generally nerdy on a near-weekly basis. So don't leave us hanging. Rate and review the show on your podcasting app of choice. We're on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, and many more, and hopefully more to come. If we're not somewhere, let us know. We can look into getting it there as well. So just be sure to find us, shoot us an email, thepulllistpodcast@lovethynerd.com, or look for us at thepulllistpodcast.com. So thanks, everyone. Thanks for listening. And remember, kids, read more comics.
Shazam!
You've been listening to the Pull List Podcast with Chris Poirier and Hector Mira, part of the Love Thy Nerd Podcast Network. Be sure to rate and review the show and share on all the social media.